Jeff Crawford works with an organisation called ADDI, which is Australians for Disability and Diversity in Employment. Jeff is the operations manager and company secretary for ADDI. Jeff has a long experience working with people with disabilities. He was a manager for 11 years, I think, Jeff. About 10 or 11 years with the Vision Australia factory, for people who are blind or vision impaired, factory services there providing employment for workers with vision impairments. And he's had extensive experience in the not-for-profit sector around employment matters. Jeff also has a vision impairment himself, and I will now hand the microphone over to Jeff, who will introduce his panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you all for coming and listening to our session. I've known Bill Lawler, who preceded us in the first session of the day, and I always knew following him would be a bit of a tough gig, but I'm pretty confident that you'll find after the next 55 minutes or so, this session will be very interesting and often very thought-provoking. ADDI is about to celebrate its 10th year in existence in September, and we're basically a small organisation focused on systemic advocacy around employment issues. We've done research projects over the years, and in more recent times ran a number of workshops for employing people in the for the benefit of employing people with disabilities in the NDIS launch sites of Newcastle and Darwin. Our speakers today are going to speak to you about their own real-life experiences around employment issues and advocacy within the disability sector. We have Liz Kelly, Robert Pask, and Martin Stewart. Robert, just excuse me while I find my notes. It's hard when I've got a glaring light in one eye and the notes are hard to see. Robert, in his advocacy career, has played a key role in promoting policy focus on job retention for people with chronic illness and disability. In addition to formal advocacy, he personally supported people with disability to stay in work through the provision of peer support, advice and referrals. Last year, Robert was the recipient of the National Disability Award for Excellence in Advocacy and Rights Promotion Award and the Huntington's Victorian Advocacy Award. Would you please welcome Robert Pask?
Do we have to push?
I don't know.
Sounds like it.
Is it working? Yeah. Oh, good. Good morning. I've been involved with advocacy and employment for quite a while, and there are issues that I believe are being overlooked. There's the perception that people with disabilities can't do jobs or don't want to work. There are quotas in government departments for people with disabilities, but we've got businesses should have a quota. The number of people they put on with disabilities, but the quota is just a start. People don't realise a person with disabilities has got the same, more loyal in the workforce. They can do what other people can do, and they've just got to be given a go, and not treated like lepers. A big problem is that we found is is job retention, which is an enormous problem. And people have to support people with disabilities, because a lot of people with acquired disabilities. In fact, in 2009, 1 million people fell out of the workforce with chronic illness. Those people could have been kept in the workforce with a little bit of support. A person with multiple sclerosis like myself or with Parkinson's or other chronic illnesses may not be able to work a full 40-hour week, but there could be things like job share put in place. And the government do have
have
services that could help to keep people in work, like workplace modifications and things like that, that people don't access enough. Also, we've been looking at something like a sick leave pooling, where if somebody's away, that they if they use their sick leave up, that somebody else can give their sick leave to them. This week, it was now 58 million hours of holiday days haven't been used in Australia alone. So you can imagine how many sick days haven't been used and how they could be shared around. We're lacking a lot in education of employers, and we've got to really start educating employers, employer groups and unions, and get them involved as to what people with disabilities can do. You're bringing a lot of people. We're saying there's a skill shortage in Australia, and they're using 487 visas to bring people in to do jobs. We've got people that may have fallen out of the workplace because of disability that have got the skills that they could put back into the workforce. They could be used for training. If a person has had a stroke or something like that, it was working on a printing machine, they could be brought back into the workforce to train apprentices. We've got a shortage of apprentices. So they could use people with disabilities who have lost limbs or something like that as trainers. We're not being utilised enough. In Australia at the moment, the focus is on paid parental leave. It's about babies. What about some sort of paid scheme for a person that falls out of the workforce and gives, when somebody's been diagnosed with an injury, had a car accident, had an industrial accident that needs time off work and can't go straight back into the workforce? How about that we had, instead of paid parental leave, we had a paid system overall? I believe very strongly that advvocacy groups, all groups, should be working together on employment. We've got groups like advocate groups from different organisations going in different directions. We've got to really come together and make it people aware of what we're doing. As examples, there's examples of ads on television, and I'll go back to the organisation that I worked for, and it's not canning that organisation at all, but they used to have ads on television with people with MS. One ad was a woman who couldn't pick up a child from school because her MS was keeping her at home. At the same time, there was a person, a man who couldn't go out and play cricket with his son because it was too hot, and the heat, and people with MS are a very high proportion of heat intolerance, so he couldn't go outside and do the normal activities. If those people were applying for a job and an employer saw that, they'd say, these people aren't reliable. There's got to be... It's not about fundraising. It's about assisting people and being positive about what people can do. The organisation I was with, everybody's heard of the MS Readathon. I don't know if you've been at school. It doesn't happen at the moment. But they used to have people going out to speak at the school rooms. And the people that went out to speak were able-bodied people, didn't have anything wrong with them, and they take along a person with MS. And the person with MS was there as a token. It doesn't work with disability groups using people as tokens. I had the argument with the organisers of the readathon saying, we need to have why can't people with MS go out and do this themselves? What I got back was, how can you rely on a person with MS getting up in the morning and turning up for work? How do you rely on a person with the flu getting out of bed in the morning and turning up for work? There is absolutely no difference. And you find that these people are more reliable. They will turn up for work. We need more support to get people to get people as far as transport. There's a lack of transport to get people to get people the jobs and interviews. They're doing at the moment talking about people on Newstart having to go write 40 applications for jobs a month. There are people with disabilities that need jobs. We're up against more and more up against competition to get jobs, whereas the people with disabilities have got the skills and should be given the opportunities to move on. And that's really it. I really believe that we've got to work more together as groups. We've got ADDI, they're representing everybody with looking for from work, but it needs the other organisations brought into it. People with disabilities have got the mental capacity, in most cases, to do jobs. They can do high jobs, and I believe that people need to be given a go. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. That was very interesting. Just for the sake of timing, I'd ask that you all hold your questions until the other two speakers have had their say, if that's okay. Thank you. Our next speaker is Liz Kelly. Liz is a parent of a child with a disability, is the past president of the Association of Children with Disability, a board member of the Children with Disabilities Australia, a current member of the Victorian Disability Services Board, a member of the Victorian Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, and is the deputy chair of the Victorian Disability Advisory Council. As you can see, she's well experienced in the disability sector. Please welcome Liz Kelly.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me. And also, as a sideline, I actually work, I have my own business, and I actually work in human resources. So it's all about people. And I have a business partner who we work together, and as far as work for people with disabilities, I think it is obviously more achievable than it's ever been, but there's a lot of work to be done, and I agree with all the things that Robert was saying, and I'll just talk at it from probably a parent perspective. And probably a professional perspective. What I've seen happen is sometimes kids aren't given a good enough education. They're not given the skills to transition from school like other kids get. So my view as a parent is the earlier and the more creative you can be with your child if they do have a disability is to actually start talking about what they want to do to earn money. Because let's face it, with money you have power. We live in Australia, the more money you have, you know, the better outcomes you're going to have, the more choices you can make in life. And I think the earlier as parents we talk to our kids about what they want to do and being creative. If we think about Australia and where it is as a country, where do the jobs lie? Where are the industries closing and where are they actually opening? And one of the areas is the human service area in Australia. For example, the NDIS are saying they're going to need something like 40,000 more workers because of the NDIS. So where can we fit within that space as people with disabilities? What's our role there? The other areas is aged care. How do we ensure that we get a foothold into those industries? One of the projects I've been working on and talking about is actually talking to employers about what's in it for them. because often they don't understand what's in it for them. And if you can show some, an employer the productivity gains that they can make. So why is it better to employ someone with a disability? How could they do it? So sometimes they have these very high position descriptions and there's all this multitasking in roles, whereas some of those roles could be broken down and simplified for people who may have an intellectual disability who could do part of that role and make the make it all more productive for employers. I actually don't think that they don't want to do it. I think that they just don't know how, and they also don't know what's in it for them. And I really think when we're talking about employers who are there to make profit, they are keen to see how they can do that better. And if we can show them, I reckon they would employ more people with disabilities. So we've been working in that space. Also about creative, what sort of roles are out there for people? You know, there's people who have money who work a lot who need things around their house, you know, done. Like there's a lot of work. There's like people want their house cleaned. They want their dogs walked. They want to be walked and they want to pay for all that. So, you know, there are opportunities out there for people with jobs in those particular areas. So, I mean, that's my message, and that's all I've got to say. Thanks. So go for it.
All right, thanks, Liz. I'm now going to hand over to our third speaker, Martin Stewart, whom I've known for 16 years, and if I told you all I know about him, we won't have any of the session left, so I'll go to the abridged version. Martin has sat on many boards of community groups, including Disability Resource Centre, National Federation of Blind Citizens, the Yarra Rangers Council, to name just a few. He has worked in various roles, including Conciliation Officer and then Industrial Relations Officer for the Royal Victorian Institute for the Blind. With many years of extensive industrial relations experience and knowledge consulting, negotiating and advocating various individuals and collective industrial agreements, his experience has allowed him to establish many contacts in the media, the government and the community. Please welcome Martin Stewart.
I come with a warning. I don't stick to safe ground. I go beyond the square and I'll do that today. Because taking a risk is part of your development. Taking a chance, taking an opportunity, making people understand what you understand. Having them feel your life, hear your truth. That's how I live, and I think it's how and the best way to contribute to your own personal development and the development of the society as a whole. I don't believe in just being another brick in the wall, following. I do believe in leading, influencing, changing. Working for Change is this session's call, and I believe it should be our life cause. There's many ways to communicate. There's a noise of pleasure or pain or anger. I've had enough. I love you. There's all kinds of ways. Sign language. Writing. Yes, the production of your voice can come in so many different forums, but it's got to be your way. Make sure it's your words, your way. Make sure you make your mark. I was not brought up to feel safe. That's perhaps part of the reason why I don't play it safe. It's good to feel safe. It's good to feel secure. But going beyond the square, taking that risk, is the only way you're going to find out how far you can extend yourself and what your true capacity is. And that's about getting ready for life, which involves employment, which involves making friends, which involves establishing relationships, etc. It just involves. So you must evolve with life itself as you come across it. Survival instincts are really important. I got lucky in 2001 when I was hit by a train and lost my arm and leg. I wasn't unlucky. I was very lucky to survive and experience and become much more expressive through these experiences. I can now communicate through not only a disability that I was born with, but one through that accident that I acquired. A whole lot more interesting. We've heard phrases such as seeing is believing, and there was a famous song, told you I'd go beyond the square. If a picture paints a thousand words, then why can't I paint you? Well, the reason why, Mr. Gates, who sung the song, much better than me, is that you can't paint a picture. It doesn't draw all these descriptions, and pictures just are a picture. You can paint it, but it's just a picture. It doesn't paint a thousand words. What paints a thousand words comes in so many different formats and ways. As I said before, I love you says and means so much. So does the alternative words. You can write. You can sign. You can do what you need to do and can do to get your story over, to get the frustrations out or express your love. So these expressions, seeing is believing. If I said nothing and you saw me, what would you believe? Well, perhaps nothing, perhaps something. I don't know. But I believe in being expressive. So, I strongly suggest that those who lack confidence amongst us, it doesn't come naturally at times, take a risk. Take an opportunity. And if it's not there, try and make it happen. And as I said, sometimes it doesn't come naturally. Believe it or not, I'm actually not naturally comfortable in crowds, but yet I'm speaking to a group now because I'm taking a risk. I'm out here before you expressing myself. When you do this, you will win respect and admiration, even if there are signs of discomfort. All the more reason for people to be attracted by what you've done, what you do. In other words, do something. I have had experience with union politics, being the president of a union and also in management. All the dynamics of life have come to me, or I've gone to it. In other words, you can be flexible and still believe in basic principles of fairness, justice and reason. And that's what I've stuck to. Fairness, justice and reason. You hear the other person. Don't be just a transmitter. Be a listener. Then consider and then make your mark. This is an important part, as a matter of fact, I think in the end, the entire aspect of what you can be if you listen, consider, and transmit. Make sure you cast your individuality. Make sure that you are you. So many people try to get people to believe they're someone else. Always take an opportunity to influence something or someone. That is the only way you can become a champion for change. So, employment is so important. There's no such thing as a menial job. No such thing as a menial job. I am very critical of some in this sector, the disability sector, who are critical of people who work in what is previously known as sheltered workshops. Very critical. Because these places add value. It's a contribution. Absolutely right that the conditions and pay rates should reflect that contribution, and currently, in the past, and in the short-term future only, I hope, these conditions aren't good enough. The pay isn't good enough. But I really don't care if it's two screws in a bag, if it's working under a car, if it's a rocket scientist. I don't care. It's valuable. It's a contribution. Even whether it's paid or not, if you choose a voluntary role, it's your way to contribute. Just like the taxi driver, train driver, or pilot who got you here today. That was their contribution. Your contribution is to be here and go away and develop your strategy to give. And that's the important part, giving, not just receiving. So often we are presented as wallflowers, subjects of charity, recipients. I say, yes, we can receive even people's generosity, but give back what you get. Ensure if you go to a place for dinner that you take a bottle of wine, not just be given something, nice meal, you hope. Yes, just understand that the stereotype of us is that we should receive, be given, be supported. Don't shy away from that fact. But you can support, you can give, and it's so important that you make your signature in that way. Signatures are not just given on pieces of paper. They are offered through your presentation. Why is it that the unemployment rate is not getting better? It's getting worse for people with disabilities. I'm not one to issue stats because you'll always get it wrong because someone else will have another set of figures. So I won't do that. But I know it's getting worse. We know it's getting worse. Government, anybody who's here from government, think about it. Employ people in your offices, whether they be electoral offices, whether they be local, state or federal government offices, whether it be the Prime Minister's office. Think about a diverse group working for you and with you. Ladies and gentlemen, every time you get an opportunity to speak like I've just had, take it. Embrace it. make it your contribution. Take that chance to influence something or someone. Your chance to become a champion for change. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. As you can all see, Martin is very passionate at the issue we're talking today and many other issues around advocating for people with disabilities. I did pick up on two words that Martin used, valuable and the contribution of somebody working. How many of you were at the session this morning with Thomas when he spoke of his job at the bar in a, I think it was a cinema or somewhere like that, or theatre company?
Malthouse Theatre Company,
yeah. Did any of you see his... how many of you felt the power that his employment gave him? He was just so proud of that job, and I have a nephew who has an intellectual disability and he was given an opportunity similar to that. And whenever he talks about his work, he just beams. It's very, very important, the value of work to all of us, with or without a disability. It's time now to open up the floor for some questions. The system today is if there's questions, we'll give you a number. There's a couple of roving mics coming around now, so if you've got any questions, could you raise your hand, please? And if you do ask a question, just state your name or stand when you're asking the question, if you wouldn't mind. Don't be shy. There's a few here, but...
First one. Hi, my name's Delia Portlock. I live with an acquired brain injury as well now as...
Where are you, Julia? I can't tell.
Delia.
Still can't. Oh,
down
I see.
The
you're
back
right.
In
got
the
you.
Middle.
Yep, gotcha. Yep, thank you.
Yeah, like I said, I now have a physical disability as well. I think the whole population needs education of the full worth of people with a disability working for them, and knowing that the people with a disability are probably, in a lot of times, more regular, they're not going to take days off for the sake of it. They want the work and they can do the work. But the public needs educating.
Would any of the panel members like to comment, or do you want to leave that to me? Over to me. look, I couldn't agree with you more. My organisation did run 12 workshops in the NDIS sites there with some large employers, with Deakin University, and with a number of the councils in the area, and we ran them at the employer's workplace, and they were all staggered at what three people with a disability could deliver to them. They were staggered at what the benefits are to employing somebody with a disability are. And I think you'll find that, I would guess, there's no really official figures on this, but 85% of employers just are afraid. They don't understand how they can be provided with workplace modifications, with wage subsidies, with job sharing, etc., etc. So you're dead right. Question number two, please.
Hi. This is the... Sorry, I've forgotten your name. One with the advocate.
Liz.
Sorry, yeah. In New South Wales, we have an organisation called DEWA, or DEWA, which stands for Education and Training. And their role is to people like ourselves. We have employment agencies, disability support employment agencies. Now, for 6 months and for almost a year and a half, I was chopping and changing between the two of them because I wasn't happy with the one I had. She didn't transfer me over properly, so I was left in limbo. I had nowhere to go, I had no job, and I had no support. But what I'm saying about the employment service is when you want to give us a job, a lot of us can't keep our jobs because we don't have the outgoing support. So we don't have a trainer who can come in for maybe 6 months or 12 and a half months to train us. Yet there's an organisation called Job Support who only train up people with an IQ of 70. Someone like myself or someone who's intellectually disabled doesn't have that support because we don't have, there's not a lot of agencies in New South Wales for us anymore. So where, with the NDIS, where is that, how is that going to affect people like us trying to get a job? So where do we get the support? There is no support for us now in looking for work and maintaining a job because there's no agencies out there. Because JUA has said, if you're not performing, that's it, you're gone. So I struggle trying to find work because I can't get the support I need. So I don't know.
Yeah, sorry, what was your name?
Jenny.
Jenny. Thanks, Jenny. Yeah, I think that's really challenging. I would say Job Services, JUA, I think they've always struggled in the role that they've tried to play in keeping people in employment. And I'd say one reason is because there's not enough people with a disability working in those organisations. I would say to understand where what the issues might be. Now, with the NDIS, I don't know how that's going to work for someone, but if part of their plan is that they need a support person to stay in work or to start a volunteer job, surely that's something that needs to be or could be considered and looked at. I'm just thinking about Thomas, who was here before, who was speaking on the panel, was talking about that he had got a support person to scribe for him. He's got his own business. So they're the sort of things I believe that if people can have, if parents start thinking about that with their kids into getting work experience as early as they can, getting the support to get some work experience. Like you do with any person, we all have to do some work experience. Sometimes we volunteer because we want to learn some skills. I now, because my son's got the support that he needs, I can go out and work. I volunteer. I give back, as Martin described. But I think that's something we should be certainly advocating for under an NDIS, if part of someone's plan, because one of the key indicators of success of the NDIS will be more people with disabilities in work. It has to be, because it can't continue. The stats can't continue the way they're going. And I think that one thing that people could ask for is the right support to sustain them in work. So, yeah, thank you for your question.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. And Jenny, this whole conference is all about advocacy. I'd suggest maybe there are organisations like NSID and DANA, and I'd suggest you go outside to the right of you and just have a chat to the ladies at SARU, part of running this conference today. Could we have question number three, I think?
Over here.
Hi.
Hi. My name's Tara, and what happens if we don't lose our pensions?
If we don't or do lose our pensions?
We are about to lose our pensions from the government. How can we do that? Why is they doing it to us?
Tara, firstly, allow me to say it's not definite that you'll lose your pension. I will say this, though. This government is making it very, very concerning environment. It's creating a very concerning environment. And I'm very disappointed that people such as yourself are being made to feel insecure, as you are. And the language of this, what my view is, very, very hard-line government, is upsetting, concerning, and quite frankly disgusting. I don't believe it will be automatic that you would lose your pension, but I do believe that there's going to be set criterias that may make it more difficult.
I'd just add a comment too, and this is not meant to be a political comment, but I think you've all noticed changes in the approach of the current government in terms of their budget reforms. And like Martin said, I think there's just a big wave of uncertainty and a good chance that they may back off on that particular one. Sorry?
Can I make a comment?
Robert?
Not last election, the election before, there was a campaign by... that I've got a disability and I vote. The government... I think it's what I said before, people need to get together. And the number of people with disabilities or with families who have got a person within the family with a disability that vote can actually win a seat or turn over a seat in Parliament. I think the politicians need to be aware of the strength that people with disabilities have got by the numbers that people with disabilities have got, and needs to get out to when the next federal election is, to get out to the candidates and say, what are you going to do? You can't do this. And it's about time that people with disability were seen a lot more.
Correct.
And we're an extremely powerful group of people. And I don't believe that they can start touching people's disability pension like they're talking about. Hockey just doesn't... I am being political. Hockey just does not get it. He's fortunate he's come. He doesn't have to worry about where his next meal comes from. If he lost his job in Parliament, he's on $250,000 or $350,000 a year on a pension. He's not going to lose that. And the uproar would be absolutely... The uproar with some people lost their disability pension would go absolutely troppo in the papers and the media.
I've got another question here. What if wheelchair access could be available at work sites?
They should be.
Good point.
They should be, and employers can get, if they employ somebody with a mobility problem, they can get through the workplace modifications through the federal government. They can get it for nothing.
Through job access,
put in very quickly.
Yeah, and it is free. And that's what employers don't understand. I mean, running our workshops, we heard some first-hand cases of workplace modifications. And one story that still sticks in my mind is that there was a fellow down in Geelong that all he wanted to do was mow lawns, but he was in a wheelchair. And he came across an employer who thinks outside the square, like Martin was talking, and they went to job access and they thought, a ride-on mower is really a wheelchair with blades. And the government spent $32,000 and got a lifting mechanism to get him out of his wheelchair into a lawnmower sitting on top of it, and he mowed his heart out for 15 years. And I think that was an excellent story of what can be achieved free of charge to the employer. And what a valuable employer he turned out to be. In 15 years, I believe, he had virtually no time off.
Correct.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I know Julie Gillard, the old Prime Minister. I launched with the NDIS with her.
Did you?
Yeah, I was there on TV.
I saw you.
There needs to be a public advertisement campaign federally sponsored. If the government wants to talk about getting us into employment and that we should be there, they've got to provide the assistance through those things such as public education advertisement campaigns. It's all right to say where we should be, but if we're not being employed, there's no point.
Have we got another question, number four?
Yep. Hi everyone. My name is David Baker, and I'm actually a theatre arts person I'm also a person with a disability. For me personally, just by sitting here listening to every other panel, and I must say I do strongly agree with you, because I actually have recently last year scored my dream job. I actually work as an usher at the Melbourne Arts Centre, and for me it's just a dream job, and I admire that job from every time I walk into that building. Like, I put on that uniform of like I put on that uniform and I really feel as if I'm a part of a team. And everyone there is actually treats me as an equal and treats me as, well, I'm not a person with a disability. I'm a person who is equal and I'm a person who is there just doing my job and I'm doing a job that I love and also at the same time I'm getting paid for it. What I'm saying here is for me, I have been longing for this job ever since. Ever since I was a child, I've been growing in, as a theatre arts person. I'm actually even speaking here today with Dream Theatre, and I'm actually here as a delegate, but also hearing everybody. And it is strongly also about taking risks and even challenging yourself and going out there and being proud of who you are. And I think that's I really admire everyone here. And I sure hope that there should be, all companies should actually open up their doors and go, okay, let's see what you can do. Let's see what you can do and really push through that and like really break down barriers and saying, hey, you know, be inclusive of that equality. And I'm just here to say, hey, I'm just hoping to say that. Thanks.
Thank you, David. Well said. Is there another question, number five?
I like to make a comment. My name is Epi, and I like the comment who said people with disabilities take risk. I mean, I took so many risks to get a job. I mean, the job was a part of my life. I've done policy work, I've done that, and sometimes I've gone down. I didn't give up, and I think what we said, Martin, people with disability should take risk, because I know some people with disability, because I am working community worker, and some people with disability like that, I never get a job, I'll give up, and I'm telling them, no, we should never give up, because when die, we will get what we dream. Because my dream was, since I left school, I want a job and I want a paid job. And it took me about 30 years, I got a paid job. And I am really, really proud. And I am trying to give a message to every disabled person, never give up. Because one day, they will get what they want.
You're agreeing with Martin. Well said.
Can I just make a comment to that?
Can I just say on that level, it's often overprotective, well-meaning parents who start the problem. who commence the problem and keep someone overly safe. You get someone who becomes within themselves and can't come out, or at least finds it very difficult to come out. Just average existence, and if that means a risk, if that means wanting to climb a tree, well, don't panic, don't freak out. Let them climb the tree in the safe way, if it's possible. If it's not, well, maybe they'll fall. But the point that I make is don't cotton wool, don't overprotect if you're a parent out there. But of course, you've got to do it reasonably. Well done to the speaker. Thank you.
Can I just say here to that with Martin? I was going to make the same comment. As a parent of two children, one with a disability, one without, my concern about society as a whole and their parenting is this whole helicopter parenting, where people are constantly in their kids' face, and more so with their kids who have a disability. Of course, we all worry about our kids. We always will. Anyone here who's a parent knows we will. But ultimately, my view is, with both my children, is give them experiences, give them life experiences, and that whole theatre thing's fantastic to hear, because my daughter loves theatre. She doesn't have a disability, but I keep saying to her, you know, go and work in theatre, go and find, you know, be an usher, do those sort of things. If that's what you love, even if that's your work experience or that gets you, that's a part-time job while you do something else, you know. So when with work, and because I work in this field and careers and those sort of things, is, you know, start mapping it out as early as possible, think about it, talk about it, and there's so many ranges of jobs and careers and roles you can do that aren't just that are outside the square. And so many stories I've heard of people who have done have started their own business doing something interesting and different because they've been flexible. Sorry, thank you.
That's all right. Is there one more question? I see Robin's walked in, so we've got to be wound.
Hi, my name's Julie Brasington. I work with... I've got an intellectual disability. I work with a company in Gippsland that actually helps people with a disability get employment. But my concern is that is they're going... I've got four kids. I've got one with a disability. I'm hoping that there will be actually a placement for him when he's old enough to start work.
I'll tell you what I would say to that, and that is don't be judgmental about where that employment comes from. I said in my talk that I'm really, really disappointed with many in the disability sector who are against people with disabilities working together. If that needs to be, if that is what it is, don't shun it. It's their contribution, and so many people develop from that process to go elsewhere. Vision Australia Enterprise, the very public campaign where Vision Australia let it go, dropped it. You may remember that campaign run by the Blind Workers Union of Victoria. And we lost, and I'll tell you why we lost, because we got no help from disability advocacy organisations. It was disgusting, and it's because there's this judgment that is made that if you're working together as people with disabilities, that's not a real job. I'm going to get an outside job. You haven't got that, you're shunned, and it's disgraceful. Told you I'd go beyond the square. Thank you.
All right, look, thank you very much for your attendance today. We've got to wind up for lunch now. I'll hand over to Robin McKenzie in a moment. I'd like to say thank you to all of our speakers. I think they did an excellent job, and if you could show your appreciation, please. And I'll hand back to Robin Gale.